On this episode of Big Boys Don't Cry, we discuss the film Mamma Mia 2, Here We Go Again. You don't have to have seen the film to enjoy the podcast, but if you do proceed without having seen it, just be aware that the plot of the film will be spoiled for you. Enjoy.
Paddy Johnston. Here we go again. Hello.
Evening. Let's talk about some shit. Sorry. Let's talk about Air Bud. Oh no, that's my other podcast.
Is Air Bud up next? Is that where you're going?
It is. We were supposed to record yesterday, but we had to put it off because of a diary clash. But yeah, Air Bud, seventh inning fetch. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it. I have seen the first two Air Buds. The Air Bud where he plays
basketball.
Where he plays basketball, and then there's one where he plays football, American football.
Air Bud Woof Receiver, what's it called? They've all got like sports pun names. Golden Receiver, of course.
Golden Receiver.
Yeah. Seventh inning fetch. World Pup. But the original is basketball. And did you know that the dog is actually playing basketball in it?
That is officially 100% accurate.
In the first one. No, it is actually real. I'm being serious. It's real.
The dog is slam dunking. He's doing
genuinely
all the tackles.
Genuinely, the guy, it's based off of the fact that this guy who's like a war veteran did genuinely train his dog how to play basketball, and that inspired the films. It's true.
There we go.
Definitely real news.
Absolutely 100% non-fake news.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, so yeah, and there's two Air, two Bud.
Air Bud Tokyo Drift, where he's sports racing.
Yeah, and sumo wrestling. Yeah. But yeah, like all good series, the quality of it declines as the series goes on. With the possible exception of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yes, it's true. There's a few series that do get better as they go on. But rarely movie franchises generally get worse, whereas TV shows can get better.
Yeah, although I am a fan of the new Star Wars movies, but they did have to go through a really awful period to come through the other side of that. And I guess that's such a behemoth, isn't it, that it's not really a fair comparison, is it?
Well, I count them as three separate entries in the same intellectual property. So you've got the original trilogy, you've got the prequel trilogy, and you've got the Disney trilogy. And I don't really count them as sort of as one giant amorphous blob of film. They're almost their own individual identities.
Yeah. It's one small step for man. That's one giant amorphous blob for mankind.
one of the few movie franchises that does get better as it goes on is The Fast and the Furious.
So I hear. I don't think I've seen any of them, honestly.
The first one is silly and takes itself too seriously.
It is our man Vin Diesel, right?
It is Vin Diesel.
See, we like Vin Diesel. He's a friend of the podcast.
He is always chatting about our podcast. He loves us so much.
Yeah.
And the second one is pretty bad, but kind of fun in a bad way. No Vin Diesel in the second one.
Oh, okay, well, fuck that.
Just Paul Walker. And then the third one features nobody. That is Tokyo Drift. Tokyo Drift is one of the worst.
So there's no people in it, just cars.
Just cars. It is like Cars, apart from...
It's Jeremy Clarkson's wet dream.
There's no talking Lightning McQueen. It's just cars revving their engines.
Oh, what?
That's it. And then Vin Diesel turns up at the end to give a little cameo.
Did you know, as well as Cars, Pixar also has a film called Planes?
It does. They both sound awful. I watched a little bit of Cars and thought it was trash. I have no interest in watching Cars 2, Electric Boogaloo, or Planes. I'm looking forward to pogo sticks, unicycles, segways, and Elon Musk's weird tube thing. Those are going to be the next Pixar movies.
These are all the things you're going to buy my son when he arrives, right?
Exactly. But after Tokyo Drift, the Fast and Furious movies get better and better as they go on after that point.
Interesting.
They are super enjoyable action movies that make a ton of money and deserve to make a ton of money.
Do you think that's to do with the skill of a particular director or a producer or what? Or is it some kind of magic alchemy?
I think CGI. It's a magic kind of alchemy. Well, I think basically they have nailed down what people want from a Fast and Furious movie. And so they just keep amping it up with every release after that point. So they struck gold with the fourth film and they realized, oh, wait, people like this if it's an action movie that doesn't really have that much to do with cars anymore. Let's do more of that. Let's have The Rock and Vin Diesel punching each other.
Yeah, I'm always up for that.
Let's include cars in the most ridiculous ways imaginable. So the fifth one, there's this great scene at the beginning where they drive a car off a train on a bridge into a river. And it's like, this is amazing. This is the best thing I've ever seen in my life. And they just keep getting better and better and better as it goes on. They are fantastic movies.
I just realized that I was just thinking about, you know, properties that are being reinvented and stuff. And I just realized that there's a trailer that I haven't seen for the quote unquote live action Sonic the Hedgehog movie. Have you watched this?
I have not seen it. I saw the posters. That was enough to scare me off. But I have a real problem with live action stuff that's not live action.
Yeah, like Detective Pikachu.
Well, Detective Pikachu isn't. That's fine because it's got human beings in it. The problem comes with The Lion King, the so-called live-action Lion King, where everything is CGI.
Yeah.
It's an animated movie. Just call it an animated movie.
Yeah.
It's fine. You can call it an animated movie. You can even call it a really boring-looking animated movie, given that The Lion King looked really vibrant and now you've just thrown a load of mud on it. You know, fair enough if you want to go down that route, but don't call it a live action thing. Unless you've got a genuine fight between two lions in the middle of a fire pit at the end.
If it's not narrated by David Attenborough, it's not live action. It doesn't count. It is
exactly.
Yeah, it hasn't got Attenborough going, here comes Scar.
Here comes Scar.
He's going to kill Mufasa. And there's nothing we can do but watch and realize the futility of our existence as humans.
Well, my favourite thing about the Attenborough series is at some point in every one of his series, there's a moment where he turns around and says, you know what's the most dangerous thing for these animals? You shits. You bastards watching this.
You're right.
You have destroyed the world and it's all your fault and there's nothing you can do now. Here you can watch 10 minutes of penguins dying and it's all your fault.
Well, did you watch the Dynasties program that he's been narrating recently?
I watched all but the last one. We still haven't watched the final episode.
Because there was a baby penguin dying in that one and it made me weep.
Yes. But then you had the great bit at the end where you saw that they then try to help the penguins
yeah.
by building that little ridge out of where they'd fallen down.
So I think that Attenborough is actually edging ever closer to that line each year until eventually he's going to be like 105 years old. Probably all the rest of us will be dead. Brexit will have happened. It will have decimated everything. But he'll still somehow be there. And he'll just turn to the camera and be like, look at all this horrible stuff. It's all your fault, you awful people. Now fuck off.
Yeah. Now get out of my sight.
Yeah. And then he'll just walk off into the sunset and we'll never hear from him again.
I mean, that would be amazing. The only thing you see then is that you're like seeing some other footage of penguins and somehow the penguins have built this shrine to David Attenborough out of ice. It's like, what? Was Attenborough here? And just over the centuries, you just find more and more Attenborough shrines.
Yeah. Maybe the real Attenborough was the shrines that we made along the way.
So speaking of beloved treasures... let's talk about Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again.
Two Mamma, Two Mia, Electric Boogaloo, The Bronholm Strikes Back, you know, all of that.
Mamma yeah. Mia 2, Judgment Day. So this movie, what do you think of Mamma Mia 2, Paddy?
Well, this is an interesting one in terms of the context of how you watched it, because as I texted you, I saw it in the cinema. Or as I mentioned actually last week, I saw it in the cinema and I remember feeling quite a sense of genuine enjoyment in the cinema and finding it very, very fun, despite the two old women who would not shut up singing along with everything like really out of tune, and also as soon as any song started going, oh, I love this one, like I was really
that was an
quite
excellent
angry
impression of a man doing an old woman voice, Paddy.
That's the kind of thing that a gammon would say, isn't it? Have I become a gammon?
Has Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, brought out your gammon instincts?
It has boiled me.
Your innate gammon sense.
So I saw it in the cinema and I remember quite enjoying it and thinking it was a bit of good, stupid fun. Probably not as good as the original, but still quite good and enjoyable. And the critical consensus at the time was that it was good, generally speaking. But then watching it at home, despite the there not being any potential for the general public to annoy me, it sort of felt a bit flat on the second viewing. Whereas with the first one, I have seen it multiple times and it's sort of quite charming each time. Whereas this one was, you start to see the inconsistencies and the flaws a lot more on a second viewing, I think. But what did you think?
I didn't see it at the cinema, but I have not seen either of the Mamma Mia films at the cinema.
I haven't seen the first one in the cinema.
No, I didn't see the first one in the cinema. I just saw them both at home. I did not like this movie very much.
Did it upset you? Are you angry?
It didn't make me angry. It just made me disappointed.
I'm not angry with you. I'm just disappointed.
I felt like...
You say to your large adult son, Will the intern from W1A.
Oh, God bless him. And I think that... It's hard to think of why, and it's nothing to do with the new cast. I think that the new people are entertaining. Lily James is maybe the most competent musical actor in the series so far in terms of combining the exuberance that comes with the Mamma Mia movies, which was always a little bit missing from Amanda Seyfried's performances, with actually being able to sing. So Lily James kind of encompasses what you wanted from a Mamma Mia movie in terms of that competency and actually having an obvious sense of enjoyment in what she's doing. But I just felt as though tonally there was this shift towards the maudlin, which took up far too much of the runtime. So the first Mamma Mia is a romp. It is silly, even though there's this big mystery about who the father is. It doesn't matter who the father is. They're all the father.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point. And it's just fun all the way along. Whereas with this one, it starts with sadness and then you get some more sadness. And then they throw in a pinch of extra sadness. You get Pierce Brosnan singing sadly, which admittedly is hilarious.
I genuinely burst out laughing. I was laughing for about 5 minutes as soon as he started singing. It was such a weird moment. Can you not think, how did he do it with a straight face? He's literally singing sadly to himself whilst looking at pictures of his sexy dead wife, Lily James. It's awful. Really terrible.
And the fact that
that's like his main moment in the film.
Yeah, that the fact that it is a picture of Lily James rather than Meryl Streep makes it even better, because they have shared no interactions whatsoever, the two of them. And so it felt very that scene went far enough into the sad direction that it was funny. And the fact that it was Pierce Brosnan, that's great, you know. Yeah. Brosnan in this movie is just as good as he was in the last one. But they spend so much time on the sadness that I was getting bummed out. And I was like, I didn't watch this movie to feel sad. I don't care that Meryl Streep is dead. Fine, whatever. I don't care that for some reason...
I'm going to put that on the Twitter as a quote advertising the podcast. You know, they have quotes from it'll be a picture of your face and just in quotes, I don't care that Meryl Streep is dead.
Are you going to be sending all of the Meryl Streep fans after me? And am I going to be getting death threats?
Oh,
from
no.
Meryl Streep
the Streeple. Not the
Streeple.
Wake up, Streeple.
I don't care that her character's dead. It was I mean, they needed to do something. I don't know why she didn't appear, whether it was a scheduling conflict or she didn't want to do it or whatever. Do you know why she didn't appear in the movie?
I don't actually know. I assume that it was because she actually didn't want to, but they kind of persuaded her to probably go into a studio for one day and sing that song against a green screen, because her performance was half-assed. To put it mildly, I think she didn't really look like she wanted to be there. Her voice was really flat compared to how she is in The Winner Takes It All in the first film, which she did in one take and which is breathtaking. It's so good.
Yeah, and so she, it's not really she's not really here.
No, she's a ghost.
But you don't watch this movie for the characters. No. You don't care about the hardships of how difficult it is to set up a hotel, or that their mum is dead, or that Dominic Cooper, despite being some kind of weird freeloader in the first movie, is now a Mondo professional who has to break up with his wife to go and be in a fancy hotel somewhere for a while.
It's in like, New York.
I don't care, Dominic Cooper. Do what you want.
He's learning it from the best in the business. No, but you're absolutely right. That's the thing. There's a real disconnect between the kind of the attempts at the Notebook style emotional manipulation versus the fun and ridiculous numbers, of which there are a few. One of which is Waterloo, in which Will, the intern from W1A, plays a baguette like a saxophone.
And which is amazing.
Is awesome. But yeah, you're right. To give it that sense of fun, they had to reprise Dancing Queen, which just to me just felt so cheap and lazy with all the fishermen on the boats. Especially, I think it doesn't help that I think Dancing Queen is actually one of ABBA's least good songs. It's fine. I don't hate it, but I think it's massively overrated and they have much better songs in their catalogue.
My favourite thing about Dancing Queen, it's the amazing YouTube video of the Japanese businessman singing it for the first time.
That's going in the show notes. Dancing Queen! You can dance! I really want to go to karaoke with that guy. He seems like a total hoot.
I would love to do that. But you know what I mean, in terms of there's zero point in all of the sadness in this movie. You didn't watch the first film for sadness.
No.
Why did you have to inject so much misery into this movie about ABBA songs?
See,
if I wanted misery in a movie about ABBA songs, make a ABBA biopic where you can go into their disintegrating relationships.
Oh my god, that would be a heartbreaking film.
And that would be a really sad movie. But here, where it's a bunch of weirdos on a Greek island, right? I love the internal lore of the Mamma Mia movies.
the
Mamma Mia cinematic universe, that ABBA's music clearly doesn't exist.
Yeah,
because they're singing it all not as a cover version but as this spontaneous thing. Yet they will just break out into song and everybody knows what's going on and everybody knows the words. I love that. That's brilliant. Why do you have to go mess it all up by being like, my mum's dead?
That's what's good about musicals. And this is the thing, like, musicals are able to be so affecting and incredible and to get things across in that way. Like, you haven't seen Hamilton, have you?
No, I've not seen Hamilton.
Have you listened to the soundtrack album at all?
I've heard a little bit of it. I like David Diggs. He's great.
He's a ledge.
So I actually listened to his hip hop clipping. Really great experimental hip hop stuff. If any of our listeners are into that, you might be.
Yeah.
Really check it out. It's amazing. So I really like his stuff in general. And in fact, he was in one of the best movies of last year, a film called Blindspotting, which is all about gentrification. Really great film that manages to combine that kind of spoken word element into bits and pieces of the movie. It has that same kind of tone as the likes of Trainspotting or La Haine, where it's got those elements of humor mixed in with the tragedy, and it'll just flip a switch and change into something else. It's got that real power behind it. So go watch Blindspotting, anybody. It's really good. Completely flew under the radar. Should have won all the Golden Globes.
I did not see that.
It's really awesome. Really good. So I really like Devi Diggs. So I've listened to a little bit of Hamilton, but I find it difficult to listen to musical music if I've not seen the show or I don't have the context of where it is within the show's framework.
And I think Hamilton was the first time that I ever sort of thought that it felt like it was okay to listen to the music of a musical divorced from its context on the stage. And it works as an album and as a thing that you listen to. But even still going to the show, even though I knew every single word when I went to the show, it was still an incredible experience. It didn't spoil it for me. And I think I've since sort of listened to bits and pieces of other musicals that I haven't seen and would still like go and enjoy in the theatre. So Hamilton, I think, has really changed all that. But my point was that there's a song in Hamilton called It's Quiet Uptown, and it makes me absolutely bawl every time because it's so sad and so affecting and so moving. But the rest of Hamilton is sort of fun and edgy and upbeat, and there's some very, very serious stuff in there. But it still feels uplifting, even though some of it is so sad. Infinitely sadder than anything that happens in Mamma Mia 2. You know, Alexander Hamilton's 18-year-old son, but the song It's Quiet Uptown is after his 18-year-old son gets shot and is killed in a duel defending his father's honour. And it's, yeah, and it's a really, like, slow-moving ballad about the father moving his son, and, man, it gets me every single time. That's way sadder than anything in Mamma Mia 2, but it's still more uplifting than Mamma Mia 2 because Mamma Mia 2 didn't know how to strike the balance between the ridiculous numbers and the sad numbers. So it was just like, we'll go from one to the other, to the other, to the other. And the problem is that they had used up all of the good ABBA songs in the first one. And there are some in this one that I think are really good. Like One of Us, when they're both singing it either side of the wall, I thought that was really effective and really good. Knowing Me, Knowing You is a good one. Well, Angel Eyes was our particular favourite when they look into the baker. There's a guy who's like a baker who's just standing there and they're like, look into his angel eyes. That is hilarious. That is really, really good. But the first film, they just about got away with shoehorning the songs or hanging them off the story. In this film, you could tell that they built it around a thing stitched together from the songs and it didn't quite work. And they tried to make it work by emotionally manipulating you at the end with Ghost Meryl Streep.
What, you mean like Fernando, where they the most beautifully shoehorned in musical bit I've ever seen?
See, again, that's like the bit in The Princess Switch where they watch A Christmas Prince 2. It's so ridiculous that it kind of goes out the other side and it's good.
Yeah, I really love that. And I think they should have doubled down on the ridiculous. So Cher, right, Cher.
Yeah.
One of the best bits about this
Cher
movie,
and Cher alike.
She is... Cher is brilliant in Mamma Mia, here we go again. And she is only 3 years older than Meryl Streep, okay, and is playing her mother. What they should have done is just had Cher playing the character that Meryl Streep was playing in the last movie, and just have like, oh, I got some work done. Bam, sorted. You've sorted out why that has completely removed any of the tragedy that you included in this movie, all around Meryl Streep not appearing in the second one. Just replace her.
Or
just replace her with someone else.
You just make it a straight up prequel and just have all the Lily James stuff without tying it to the present day narrative.
Yeah, which would have also been really fun because they did a great job with all of that casting. Lily James, as I said, is amazing in this movie.
Yeah. You could have got two or three more songs out of Will the Intern, who is my favourite.
Yeah, and the guys, you had
Taylor Lautner, but not Taylor Lautner.
You had Hugh Skinner, who is Will the Intern.
Yeah.
Although better known by some people for being in Poldark, he plays Unwin in Poldark.
Oh, really?
In a few episodes, yes.
Ah, I did not know that. Series. I have not watched Poldark.
Oh, you should do. He's also in Kill Your Friends, a movie that I like based on a book I really like.
Oh, cool. I only know him from W1A, which I know I'm being unfair about that because I think he's actually a very good actor.
Yes, yeah, I really like him, and he does a really good job here. I think he might be the best of the three young'uns, three young lads.
His performance of Waterloo is outstanding. It really, really made me chuckle.
Really, really funny.
And he did it also while wearing the smallest leather jacket that I've ever seen and the worst T-shirt that I have ever seen a man wear.
And I think something that goes... And I think that the performances of the prequel characters are fantastic because they also manage to encapsulate the energy of their adult counterparts, as it were. Mm. I know that they are all adults, you know, they're probably older than we are, but they're playing these younger versions of them and they feel like them. So he does feel like Harry. Hugh Skinner playing young Harry really feels like old Harry.
And that from a cinematic universe point of view, whether you kind of you see it as a sequel, prequel, whatever, fitting into an existing property, that really works.
Yes, yeah, exactly. They all do really well. You've got Jeremy Irvine as well. He of Warhorse fame.
Is he young Bronhom?
He's young Bronhom.
I genuinely thought it was Taylor Lautner the first time he came on screen. And I was like, yes, come on, Wolf Boy.
Wolf Boy's back. No. He's been in some good stuff over the years. He's been around a bit longer than you might expect. But yeah, his first real breakthrough was Warhorse.
Right.
He was also in the really good Great Expectations adaptation that came out a few years back.
There's no good Great Expectations adaptation. Great Expectations is boring.
Great Expectations is one of the greatest books of all time.
Yeah, it's boring. It's not.
It's amazing.
Like Charles Dickens has way more interesting stuff than that.
No, most of Charles Dickens' stuff is boring, apart from Great Expectations, which is really well paced.
Right. A Christmas Carol is a masterpiece. I will not.
Well, yes, A Christmas Carol is good, but Great Expectations has everything in it. It has redemption. It has finding the power to reject something you felt like you wanted. It's got plot twists. It's got everything you'd want, all tied up in this narrative of social commentary. It's great. So Great Expectations, one of the best books ever.
Has it got a Bleak House in it?
It does have a Bleak House in it, not the Bleak House, which is one of the most boring books ever written. Get out, Bleak House, and take your 600 pages with you. I do not care.
I have not read it, and I have no desire to.
It is so, well, it's fine, but it's so unbelievably depressing, and it's so long. I'm sorry, but it's long, and long things are bad.
That is long things are bad.
Long things are bad.
Yeah, we can agree on that. Yeah, apart from the Silmarillion,
which actually isn't that long in comparison to Lord of the Rings. Short things are also bad, like the Silmarillion. So he's really good as well, and Josh Dillon I've not seen in anything before. He's apparently in The Little Stranger, but I didn't recognise him.
He was the smug Swede.
Yes, and he was young Bill.
Yeah.
And he was really good, and he felt like young Bill. They were all really good. But what I loved was that they all had that... They really felt like the original Mamma Mia.
Yeah.
Where they were breaking into spontaneous song, being surprised that they knew the words to this amazing song,
yep.
And then just getting on with it. And that's what worked so well about the original was, hey, we know it's silly that it's a musical. Let's just roll with it and let's have fun with it. Whereas the other half, yeah. Which was all set in the future, was so grim. And I don't want to know about how difficult it is to set up a hotel on a random Greek island.
Yeah.
I don't care about that. go sing me a song.
That really is not a sexy story, is it? Like, there's not much you can do to make that interesting.
No, exactly.
Apart from sending Gordon Ramsay in there to yell at the yell at the cooks. It's rotten.
I was expecting them to sort of spend a good 5 minutes sorting out the interior decoration.
Genuinely, the only reason that there is that present day narrative is so that they can get Cher in there to sing Fernando. It is all leading up to that, which is kind of awesome when you think about it. They had to get Andy Garcia in there to play a man called Fernando just so she could sing Fernando.
Which is one of the best moments of the movie, let's be honest.
Yeah.
That works really well. I did really love the end, although the actual end dragged on for a really long time. And when they're all wearing like the spandex outfits, I was like, for fuck's sake.
That's the thing. It should have ended as soon as she finished Fernando, because at that point, yeah. The story is concluded. That is
exactly.
But no, yeah, okay, we find out that Sophie's pregnant. Yeah, great, fine. But no, instead, you get the 9 months later, like, christening, and then suddenly, like, after all of that fun and all of that great stuff where you've just about been uplifted by Fernando after all the other grim stuff, then they hit you with the manipulation of a, like, quite bad plodding ballad ABBA song sung by Ghost Meryl Streep. I really hated it.
Yeah, the end can just get out.
Yeah.
I got annoyed by this movie.
Yeah.
And there's moments that really work where you've got random Greek fella singing with his terrible band.
Oh,
that
yeah.
That was awesome. That was really good. I wanted more of that kind of stuff.
He's an actual Greek musician. I looked him up. He seems like very, very cool.
Awesome.
A sort of pirate Greek folk singer. Loved him.
He was brilliant. That was one of my favourite parts of the film. And so there's these little moments here and there which work really well, where it feels as energetic and as vibrant and as exuberant as the first film. But then it just gets really let down by it. I think it thinks people cared too much about the actual plot of the first movie.
And about the characters as well.
And about the characters.
Yeah.
Like fair play, it's Meryl Streep. She's a good one, you know. She's been in some good movies. I don't care about a character in Mamma Mia.
No, nobody.
She is there as a method for me to get to Pierce Brosnan singing and dancing. That exactly. is why she is in that movie.
She is a vessel for Pierce Brosnan going when you're gone.
Exactly. That's why the first Mamma Mia exists, is for moments like that. And Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, should have had the same kind of focus where, hey, let's build some really cheesy, funny moments. But instead, they're the minority of the runtime.
Yeah. And again, it goes back to the choice of songs. You know, they were left with the ABBA songs that weren't used in the first one, although they kind of threw that to one side and just had Dancing Queen again. And to be fair, because that is a very, very limiting constraint, given that as a constraint on creativity and on storytelling, I think they managed to pull something okay out of it. They just fell into the trap of trying to be like overly emotionally manipulative.
Yeah, and they still had a few big ones in here. So, you know, they've got like When I Kissed the Teacher, they've got Waterloo, SOS.
When I Kissed the Teacher is kind of a creepy song.
It is an unbelievably creepy song, but... You know, we've all got creepy songs, Paddy.
Yeah, that's true.
That Palomino Club.
What are you saying?
the song about how much we love horses.
Yeah, and your song Crutches. You don't want to know what you were doing with that crutch.
The original title was Crotches, just so you know.
I thought it was Crutches Up My Bum.
That was in parentheses after Crotches.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, but it's a creepy song. It's a creepy song, but it's a fun song. You've got like Knowing Me, Knowing You.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, they bring Mamma Mia back again. Blah blah blah. Dancing Queen. Blah blah blah.
Yeah, I thought Mamma Mia was better this time around. Was it in the first one? Where was it in the first
one? It must have been in the first one. It's called Mamma Mia.
Yeah. Oh no, it is. I remember. It's when Meryl Streep first realizes that the three men have come to the island. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, no, it works much better in Mamma Mia 2, and she starts it off all slow, and then Greek Pirate Man gets all the people to come in and listen. That was really good. That's a good moment.
Yeah, and so there are those moments there, and there are some good songs here. There's other ones which, you know, I mean, ABBA has a ridiculous back catalogue of great songs. You can't really look at any of the songs across these two movies and say, that's a terrible song, that is, because it's ABBA.
Whatever the one that Ghost Meryl Streep sings, I didn't like that one. I hate that.
Is that The Day Before You Came?
Something like
that. Does
that
sound right?
No, it's My Love, My Life.
My Love, My Life.
Yeah,
okay.
That's a dreary ballad.
But like in general, they're a band which churned out the hits, deservedly so. And so for anybody who grew up with ABBA Gold in their parents' car
like both of us did.
Like both of us did. You're like, oh, that's a banger. Oh, yeah, that's a banger as well.
Yeah.
Bit weird that they've turned it into a moody ballad, but it's still a banger.
Yeah. And Knowing Me, Knowing You actually had a bit of that, didn't it? It was like it is a breakup song. Breaking up is never easy, I know. But, you know, it still felt a bit like on the nose.
Yeah. Yeah.
You had like Taylor Lautner, who's not Taylor Lautner, angrily zipping up a bag. And you're like, that's not what I think of when I think of ABBA, but okay.
Yeah, but it in general it works, and in general, you know what, it didn't feel like they were scraping the barrel for songs. If they made a Mamma Mia 3, which I'm sure they will, that's when it's going to be a bit on shaky ground, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
But in terms of the overall music, it's fine. It's just the way that they frame the movie is the big no-no.
Yeah. Did it have, what's the name of the game? That was in it, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, the name of the game was in it.
Yeah, I like that one. That's got a really,
yeah, that's a
smooth bass line.
Boop. That was my bass sound, yeah. By the way.
And you're an actual bass player.
I'm an actual bass player. But for me, bass is just whoop.
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 Whoop. I liked halfway through when it turned into Black Beauty.
Black Beat. Oh, what? Yes, yeah. I really wanted to like this because I do like the original movie. Mm. It's a good piece of fun, and I was urging it all the way along. It's like, come on, do something fun, but it just didn't do enough.
Yeah, no, I like I said, I didn't hate it. Overall, it's still enjoyable. It's not bad. It just doesn't quite capture the magic of the first one and really falls down on trying to be sad and grim. But yeah, like I went into it wanting to like it, obviously. But yeah, it is. It's a strange one. I think if you like, if you enjoyed the first one and you like the music of ABBA, it's definitely worth seeing. Like, it's not one to avoid. But yeah, just be aware that Pierce Brosnan sings in a low voice while looking at pictures of his sexy dead wife.
Yes, and we could have done with more of that.
Yeah, and that it's longer than it needs to be because they tack on a weepy number at the end and then 10 minutes of everyone singing in spandex.
I tell you what it felt like. It felt like the end of Purple Rain, where it's just going on and you're like, okay, I get it now, you can stop.
No, the end of Purple Rain is literally half an hour of a Prince concert, which is fine.
It is. it kind of shows how having an emotional attachment allows you to make those kind of moments. So Bohemian Rhapsody, Golden Globe winning. Maybe it didn't deserve to win the Golden Globes, but it is a good movie. You know, I'm not gonna be one of those haters who says it's really bad. It's not. It's a good movie. It might not entirely be historically accurate, but what really worked about it was it emotionally manipulated you in the best possible way. And then the climax of the movie is effectively their Live Aid performance.
Yeah.
And they do a good 15 minutes of it at the end of the film.
With Queen, you kind of need that to carry it, don't you?
And you do. You need that focus on the raw energy of the music, and it works. And because you're so invested in these people, you're so invested in Freddie Mercury, and they pull off these performances so well that feel so authentic, you're quite happy to go along with this really long scene. Whereas here, you don't really care about them performing these songs in spandex. It's not really funny. No. It's funny if you're the kind of person that laughs because an old man's wearing spandex.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
I did laugh a lot when it's them all like dancing with the young version of themselves and Colin Firth is just standing there looking angry while Hugh Skinner dances around him. That was very funny.
Yes, yeah. And so those kind of moments are great, but it's not just funny because it's an old person in spandex.
No, and it was a bit like that, trying to just get you to laugh at that.
Yeah. It felt a bit lazy at times, I think, is probably the best way to put it. Sometimes it went for the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, that's no way to talk about Pierce Brosnan's buttocks in spandex.
I'd grab that low-hanging fruit, I'm not going to lie.
But yeah, Andy Garcia's performance as Fernando, I like that.
Yeah, he was good.
He came across as very, very sexy, I like that. I heard the drums, Fernando.
He played the drums for me, Fernando.
Yeah, there was something in the air that night.
he was good as old Fernando.
It was very funny when Stellan Skarsgård put on some jowls to pretend to be his fat twin brother. That was quite enjoyable.
That felt so strange and out of nowhere. It was completely unrequired, and that's kind of why I loved it.
Yeah,
it was completely not necessary for the plot whatsoever, and it worked.
Nor was
perfectly.
Omidjalili coming onto him from behind the his kiosk.
Yes, yeah, you've got Omidjalili talking about people's haircuts.
Yeah, and you got the thing where young Bill and Lily James rescue a man from the sea and help him to get his love back, which just kind of felt like a nice story just sort of thrown in there. I wanted to know that guy's story.
Yes, yeah, that was a strange little moment.
Yeah, and then they find him later on, and to address the very, very serious economic plight of the Greek fishermen, they invite them to a party.
Yes, and everything's fine.
Yeah.
That's how it works. So there's all of these little moments in here which are enjoyable, but I just felt like overall it didn't work that well.
Yeah. I wrote down that Lily James is a flat earther, but I can't remember why. This is in my notes here.
Are you just sharing spurious claims about people now?
I meant her character, not Miss James herself.
Okay. Because I like Lily James. I think she's really good.
I think she's great, yeah. And she's like not even at the peak of her career, I think. I think she's going to go on to do her best work in the next decade, for sure.
Yeah, because she's been in some great movies over the years. I think one that I'm really looking out for is she's going to be in they're doing another adaptation of Rebecca.
Okay.
Directed by Ben Wheatley. He of Sightseers and Kill List fame. Most recently did Free Fire, which was amazing. And did the movie adaptation of High Rise. So he is a real talented director. He's at the moment, they've just confirmed that it's going to be Lily James and Armie Hammer in the two lead roles. So Armie Hammer as Maxim de Winter and Lily James as the new Mrs. de Winter. And I think that has the potential to be a fantastic movie. I mean, that is a great director, great two leads, fantastic source material, which has already worked really well as a film.
I'm just looking forward to seeing how a tube of toothpaste, you know, compares to a man. That's also low-hanging fruit, isn't it?
a little bit, but I kind of loved it. But apart from that, Lydia James, she's been in Baby Driver.
Yep, she was excellent in that. And she's a Brit who can do an American accent well.
She can do an American accent well, and that is a very rare skill for a British person to do.
Yeah.
She was in the TV series of War and Peace, which was good.
Oh, I loved that, yeah.
Had your man Paul Dano.
Paul Dano. I challenge you!
With his beautiful baby face.
You know what? I loved that. I thought it was really good. I didn't expect to like it at all, but I was really hooked, because I'm very rarely hooked on sort of historical period type stuff, but I loved it.
It was perfectly done. Really good. She's obviously in Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, the greatest movie
ever. The greatest film ever. I have not seen that. I'm pretty sure Claire would not allow that to pass the threshold of this house.
It's really good fun. I'll request it for the podcast next Halloween.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
It's actually really good fun. It's got Sam Riley in it as well. She was in.
She's already annoyed that I made her watch Air Bud this weekend. And she sat there just commentating, saying things like, dogs don't have a super sports gene.
I didn't realise she was a geneticist.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, what are you? Since when are you the expert on dogs? dog genes?
Since when are you the super vet?
Do you have a PhD in dog science?
Do you have a PhD in dog baseball?
Yeah, I'm going to call Noel Fitzpatrick and ask him how many dogs have hit home runs.
But yeah, so Lily James is great, and the young fellas are great. They're all really good. And they are what makes this movie worth watching. And I, you know, if you like the original, still watch this film, I'd say.
Absolutely, yeah. It's still ABBA, it's still fun, it's still ridiculous. You know.
But you will get a lot more out of the prequel stuff, I think.
I think a lot of people found the Meryl Streep crying ghost number actually quite affecting, but I did not.
But a lot of people like Mrs. Brown's Boys, Paddy.
Yeah.
You can't trust people.
A lot of people still think that we should leave the European Union, you know.
Did you see the latest thing today where the government has advised cabinet ministers how to apply for emergency funding in case people start dying?
Yeah. Following on from a few months ago where someone asked the health secretary, Matt Hancock, if he could guarantee that people would not die as a result of Brexit, and he said no.
Well, at least he's being honest, you know.
Yeah.
We are laughing, but genuinely people might die because of Brexit, which is terrifying. And it looks as though the government is taking all these precautions for when people start dying because of Brexit, but aren't telling the general public, hey, you might die because of Brexit.
Yeah, we might see the return of scurvy, so here are some limes.
Here's some limes. Yeah. Watch out for the weevils.
Oh, no, sorry, we won't be able to get limes because they come from Europe, probably.
Have a turnip.
Yeah, that was what they used to call us in the war times, turnipies, because we were always eating turnips.
It just reminds me of Brexit reminds me of that bit in that one Simpsons episode where they have the lemon tree and they have to go get the lemon tree back. Do you remember this episode?
I don't know.
I'll take that as a no. The boys have to go on this mission to their lemon tree gets stolen by kids from Shelbyville, and they have to travel to Shelbyville to get the lemon
Shelbyville.
Tree back. Yeah, I know. And they all meet their doppelgangers and stuff like that.
Oh, yes, I remember.
And at the end, they manage to get the tree back. and they're telling this story about, and that's how our brave boys got the lemon tree back. And then it cuts to Shelbyville, where there's this old guy telling a similar kind of story, and it's like, and that's why we got rid of the lemon tree, because it was haunted. Now everyone have a nice glass of beet juice. And every time they talk about, we'll make do with what we've got in this country, I'm just thinking, that's going to be just like the beet juice. We're going to be drinking beet juice.
Beetroot is fucking disgusting.
And beetroot is horrible. Yeah. It's really awful.
And you'd see it around. Like, there's beetroot ice cream and stuff. Stop it. Don't do that.
Like, the only one I can accept is people making cakes with beetroot if they want to have, nope, like a vegan alternative and things like that. It's not for me. I still don't like it. I still can taste the beetroot in it. And it's not for me, but, you know, if you're looking for an alternative where you're not using milk and eggs and everything like that, fair enough. If you can handle beetroot in your cake, that's fine.
Yeah, if you require it for vegan reasons, then that's fine. But don't expect me to eat it.
Yeah, don't expect me to eat it. I'll be eating other things that don't include the devil's root.
Things that aren't purple and luminous and viscous.
Viscous is the perfect word for beets.
Yeah. Viscous purple round boy. No, thank you.
That's going to be my MC name. MC Viscous Purple Round Boy.
Yeah, you just go on stage as a giant beet.
Yeah. Dropping mad beets dressed as a beet.
Beet roots. Yeah.
So, do you have anything else to share about Mamma Mia?
We have not mentioned Christine Baranski and Julie Walters, who reprised their roles from the first film, but both of them just kind of are a bit bleh because they're given such a lumpen script to work with. It's a real shame. But they do sing Angel Eyes, and it is very funny because they look at the baker and his angel eyes.
Yeah, they don't they don't really make good use of them, do they? They're still here and they're still funny.
No, they're mainly just there to cry that Meryl Streep is dead.
Yeah, just who cares, mate? Another quote, who cares that Meryl Streep's dead? Yeah. It's only Meryl Streep.
I'm going to get that on a t-shirt for you.
Just with my face and be like, you have to wear this. You have to wear this to a screening of Mamma Mia.
Yeah. And yeah, there was just so little of those characters. Them and Pierce Brosnan, Colin Firth, Stellan Skarsgård, they all had such little screen time that their amount of screen time and the bits in the story that they were allocated didn't really make us care about them.
Yeah, Meryl Streep hung over this movie like a weight, and they really should have just not had as much of a focus on her character.
Yeah.
Because it was, you know, if she's not going to be there, don't make the entire movie about her.
Yeah, which it was.
Which it was. The entire movie is about her. They could have quite happily had the prequel moments or things like that.
But not in a good way. Not like how Jaws is a film about a shark that's not about a shark. Yeah, this is a film about Meryl Streep that wasn't about Meryl Streep.
And I would have accepted it if they had a giant robotic Meryl Streep trying to eat them all. That would have been great.
Yeah, when the Dancing Queen reprise happens, she just rises up out of the sea and like tears one of the boats in two.
Just horrible synthesizer version, like the Hall of the Mountain King in Social Network.
Yeah, it's just Dancing Trent Queen Reznor in a minor does, key.
Trent Reznor does ABBA.
Yeah, it's Trent Reznor's like instrumental version of Dancing Queen in a minor key, with synths getting progressively louder and more distorted and like bit crushed, with the vocal of that Japanese karaoke man put over the top.
I mean, that sounds exactly like my jam. I've been listening to so Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, they did the soundtrack to recent Netflix original Bird Box.
Oh right, yeah.
Which I haven't seen yet.
I have not either. I've been hearing good things about it generally.
Yeah, I've been hearing mixed. So some people saying it's very good, other people saying it's not. I'm really looking forward to watching it and making my mind up, because I find those kind of divisive horror thriller movies quite interesting. So yeah. I'm looking forward to getting into that. But they did the score to it, and it's, you know, a really good Trent Reznor style score. So I'd love to see Trent Reznor do Mamma Mia 3.
I would love that. Yeah. I'm just wondering what ABBA songs are left. Like, could you do it without repeating any ABBA songs? You'd have to have a reprise of SOS, of course.
Deep cuts.
Yeah. There was Voulez-Vous in there? Yeah, Voulez-Vous in the first one.
Yeah, that's in the first one, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, more gold, more hits. What's on this? I do. No, that was in the first one with Bronholm. Ring Ring. That's not in any of them. That's a good one. Yeah, I think you would have a hard time.
It would be difficult. Has Hasta Manana been in any yet?
Nope.
We've got two, Paddy.
We've got two. This shit writes itself.
So we've got two songs. They could just do really slowed down version of those for the entire thing. That'd be good.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, it doesn't have stuff like the goofiness of when they do Lay All Your Love on Me and all the blokes come out the sea, or when they do Does Your Mother Know and Christine Baranski pulls the towel around the young boy. That's all very a funness to it that is just a bit lacking, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, that's the real problem, is it even misses out on those little moments of outrageous comedy.
Yeah, there's nothing outrageous in it.
No.
The most outrageous thing is a restaurant where the waiters are all dressed like Napoleon.
Yes, exactly. Let's have more of that. Let's have an entire movie around that.
Yeah, where everyone just plays baguettes like instruments all the time.
Yeah, get on that. That'd be great.
I forgot that Dominic Cooper's character is named Sky, which is stupid. Yeah, nobody's called Sky.
I mean, she should have never married him because of that.
Yeah. And his performance, he was really phoning it in this. Like I said, I did like how they framed One of Us, but his voice felt very flat there.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of people were doing other things.
Yeah.
That's the kind of sense I get from this.
Yeah, the ones who are really there were the younger ones. The older ones just kind of probably flew in, did two or three scenes and then buggered off.
Yeah, so Meryl Streep was there, did it all in a week.
Yeah, Cher came in on her helicopter, probably literally.
She literally turned up just for that scene.
Did her thing like a sketch from Shooting Stars. And then left.
Cher was great.
She sounds like
movie.
A pub singer in a good way.
I love Cher so much.
That's because you believe in life after love.
I do believe in life after love.
After love.
I could be something inside myself. I really don't South Park, right? Gone off the boil an awful lot. But in one of the earlier series, they have this absolutely hilarious version of that song that plays in a few episodes. And whenever I hear it, it's just absolutely, it's brilliant. It's so funny.
I genuinely haven't thought about South Park in a good 5 years. Maybe more.
They had a few years of being very, very funny and being very much at the forefront of doing good social satire. Like out of nowhere, they suddenly had a few series of being really, really good. And the last couple of seasons, they basically decided that they're going to go back to being centrist snarks.
Right.
And they're whining about people being mad at
them. They're asking if people need a safe space and talking about millennials and avocados and snowflakes and whatever.
Yeah. And
or complaining that they can't say things or...
The best thing is that they did the whole, but they framed Donald Trump in quite a funny way in the run up to that election. And then as soon as he got elected, they kind of chickened out of doing anything funny with him and ever criticizing him, which I think makes sense given that a lot of people who support Trump have found a lot of comedy in South Park. And I think they're a bit afraid to piss off their fan base now.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is a shame because they're exactly the kind of people that they should be mocking, but they kind of have chickened out, which is a very sad, given that South Park are the people that refuse to bow down to the Scientologists or Muslim extremists in the past. Yeah. They suddenly think it's too much hassle to criticize Donald Trump. It's like, guys, come on.
You are most definitely on the wrong side of... Yeah, snowflakes.
These snowflakes.
Yeah, they're definitely on the wrong side of
history. Yeah, so their last two or three series have been unbelievably tiresome to watch. It's just really dull, Ricky Gervais-esque, oh, we're in the middle and everything's bad because nihilism's cool, yeah.
Ricky Gervais is a bloated fool. I have no time for him whatsoever.
I will get that on a t-shirt, pal. For you.
Ricky Gervais is a bloated fool and we don't care that Meryl Streep's dead. Wait, this is going to be, yeah, our thread on Reddit.
This is, we're going to get chased off the internet.
I don't care that Meryl Streep's dead. AMA.
Do we have anything else to share about?
I'm on the Wikipedia page for Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, and it's got a list of all the musical numbers, and a couple of them have symbols behind them. One of which is songs featured on the soundtrack album but omitted from the film, which is The Day Before You Came, Meryl Streep. So, recorded it for the album, but it's not in the film. And then the other one is songs featured in the film but omitted from the soundtrack album. Guess which one?
Which one is it?
It's SOS. I don't know why they didn't want the sort of 30-second version of Pierce Brosnan going on there.
I mean, I might set that as my ringtone, to be perfectly honest with you.
You should. That'll give you a wake-up call in the morning.
Oh, dear.
And there was only one other thing I was going to say, but I think I have forgotten what it was. Oh, Celia Imrie was in it, that's it. She was in it at the beginning as the teacher who Lily James kisses. And that was kind of fun.
Yeah, she's good. She's in lots of good stuff. Yeah. And should be in more stuff.
Yeah, and it was kind of, she was only in it for that one song, and you're like, oh, that's a shame. She could have done something.
Yeah, she should have replaced Meryl Streep.
She could have done,
you've
for sure.
You've changed Meryl Streep. No, I haven't. Okay, on with the show.
Yeah. I also wrote down, don't touch the horse. I can't remember what that was related to.
That's just good life advice.
Yeah, just good advice.
You don't want to go touching horses that don't want to be touched.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think we're done, aren't we? It's all right, but no, yeah, tries too hard to be sort of a bit grim and sad. Doesn't have the magic of the first one. Some good songs, some enjoyable goofy stuff, but ultimately doesn't hang together that well.
Yes, exactly. So I've got a little bit of trivia for you.
Hit me.
Cher handpicked Andy Garcia to play the character of Fernando.
Oh, really?
Out of a bunch of selected actors.
Does it say who else was on that list?
It does not say who else was on that list. But imagine being handpicked by Cher. How cool would that be?
That's amazing. He must be so happy.
He better be. That is an honour.
Yeah.
Meryl Streep and Lily James are distant relatives.
Oh.
Ninth cousins, three times removed. I have no idea what that means.
So that you have to go quite a few great-grandparents back to get to that, but yeah, why not?
Yeah, fair enough. This is the first time that Meryl Streep has ever done a sequel.
What? That's amazing. In her however long career.
She did not return to The Bridges of Madison County 2.
Oh, no. That's why it wasn't good.
That's why it wasn't good. It was just Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
And Cher.
that's a film that I would watch.
I'd watch that. Oh, so The Day Before You Came was only recorded because it was one of Benny Anderson's and Richard Curtis's favourite ABBA songs.
Oh.
And Streep wanted to sing it.
That's nice.
But it wasn't in the film because the lyrics are too specific to have fit with the story. Unlike Fernando.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's hilarious. Unlike, why did it have to be me and Angel Eyes?
Yeah. So Hugh Skinner, Jeremy Irvin, and Josh Dillon, who play the young versions of Harry, Sam, and Bill, they all lived together in a villa in Croatia for the 6 weeks they were filming.
Nice.
Which is nice. You can imagine them having a little house party.
Yeah. You hate to think of people just like hanging out in trailers and avoiding each other.
And you know, you can always just imagine them, you know, one of them wakes up early and makes cups of tea for the other. It's like, yep. Hey, I made you all a cup of tea. Everything like that.
One of them makes pancakes.
Oh, mate. I want a movie about that. I want a movie about them just hanging out in their house.
Yeah, a bro comedy like The Wolf Boys.
Yes, exactly. They are
The Wolf Boy house from Twilight. But it's a musical.
Yeah, I'd watch that. That'd be great. Make Twilight the musical. Oh God, I bet Twilight the musical is happening.
How does that not exist already?
I don't know, but it's got to.
Yeah.
Hey, Netflix.
Netflix, if you're listening, get on to Stephenie Meyer.
Go get Twilight the musical made up. It would be perfect.
This has to happen. We could have like a new metal soundtrack. The guys from Mushroomhead, they're not doing much.
You get Mushroomhead to do Twilight the musical. I'd just like to point out, by the way, and the fantastic line, "Be still, my beating vagina," which Christine Baranski says.
Yeah, she is fantastic. She's a really underrated actor.
She's brilliant, and that was one of the few moments in this movie that genuinely made me laugh out loud. But that was only added into the script once Andy Garcia was cast, because he's that hot.
Yeah, of course. If it had been anyone else, she'd have been like, whatever.
Yeah. But I think that is the perfect place to... Oh, no, actually, hold on. I've got one more amazing bit of trivia. So the first time Julie Waters met Cher, she ran up to her in a rush of excitement and gave her a warm hug.
Aww.
However, her glasses got stuck in Cher's white wig, leaving it tarnished, and a new wig had to be used for filming.
That's amazing.
That is brilliant.
That's better than anything in the film.
So yeah, that'll do for the for trivia for this movie.
That's great. I hope Cher took it well.
I hope she did as well, but also I hope she like put a lifelong hatred on Julie Waters. Either way, either she will have loved it or despised it, and whichever choice, I'd be happy with her making.
Yeah. All right. How are we gonna rate this?
How many seconds would you awkwardly look at photos of your young dead wife? Out of 20.
Sexy dead wife. I think I could go for 10 seconds, maybe. I think it's a Bon Jovi. I feel yeah, still a little bit conflicted about it because I love all the goofy stuff, but overall it's just a bit, yeah, it's a Bon Jovi for me.
Yeah, it's not quite a Bon Jovi for
Bon Jovi.
It's not quite a Bon Jovi for me. I'll be going for an 8 because I got too bummed out by it, and you got those really good moments, but unfortunately there wasn't enough of a focus on like Lily James and that fun side of the story for me.
Yeah.
So it's just a bit of a letdown, really.
Well, there we go. I think that's fair. Averages out a 9. I think that's fine. I'm just updating the chart. So what are we going to watch next? We kind of, the last couple of films we've agreed together in advance, so I don't know whose turn it is.
I think it's your turn.
Okay. Well, I
might be wrong, but I think it is you.
I have not prepared anything, so I'm going to have to go and look at the list. See, because I feel like I chose Dumpling, and in a way, I think I also chose Mamma Mia too. So I feel like it's it's your turn.
Do you think it's me then?
I feel like it's your. I feel like it's you.
Right. Okay. In that case, let's get on track with a modern-ish potential classic, and let's watch Silver Linings Playbook.
Oh, okay. I have seen that once. But not for a while. I think I watched it when it first came out, not in the cinema, but on home viewing. Ah, good call. Got Bradley Cooper, got Bobby De Niro, got some American football in there.
That's the important thing.
Yeah.
It's got the sports.
Yeah. Oh, actually, no, I just remembered that, what you know, the rest of the film aside, there is one scene in that film that has a masterful choice of music that really stayed with me. Okay, that's all I'll say.
I mean, yeah, I was amazed when they put "Who Let the Dogs Out" over the anyway, yes, yeah. We'll watch that for next week.
Silver Linings Dog Book. See, Air Bud, most of the Air Bud films were made after that song came out. Did they use that song in any of them? I don't know, because I've only seen a couple of them.
but they didn't use it in every film.
No.
So
they definitely didn't use it in
some restraint.
Seventh inning fetch. So
exactly.
That's good. although they did have a 30-second outro in which Air Bud gets drafted by the Angels and immediately becomes World Series MVP for catching one ball at first base in his mouth.
As you do.
Which is how every film should be.
That's how every movie should end.
It's an inspiration to us all.
We've got the Avengers Endgame. If it doesn't end with that exact scene,
yeah,
I'm going to be very disappointed.
Then it will not be the most ambitious crossover event in history.
Yeah, where's Air Bud?
Yeah, Air Bud Avengers Assemble.
Anyway, yes, let's bring this to a close.
Yes, let's. You can get in touch with us on the emails, bigboysdontcrypodcast@gmail.com, on the Twitter @bigboysdontpod. Drop us a line. Always love to hear from you, and leave us a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts. It'd be very nice. I noticed we had a new one on iTunes from last year that I hadn't seen, which was nice. And a couple on other platforms as well. You're all very, very kind and lovely people. And make sure you're subscribed if you aren't subscribed already. And, you know, do delve into the back episodes as well if you haven't heard them all. There's some great stuff in there.
Yeah, we've got some absolute gold.
Yeah.
So listen to as much as possible.
Some ABBA gold.
Got some ABBA gold. Yeah. And tell us what you think of Mamma Mia 2.
Yeah.
Are you glad that Meryl Streep is dead? let us know.
It's a yes or no question.
It's a yes or no question.
Important poll.
Oh, dear.
All right. And we'll be back next week to talk about Silver Linings Playbook. That was an involuntary cough. That's not part of the film title.
It should be, though, shouldn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Silver Linings Playbook.
Silver Linings, Who Let the Dogs Out Playbook.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.